Get some of this. It's Boxeo time as In This Corner with Brian Campbell returns to reach deep into your cochlea and provide that combat fix with an uncut kilo of performance-enhancing audio. Yeah, you heard that right. Your black market fix is back again, so check it, wreck it, let's begin. But before we do, and before we reunite the tag team once more, let me remind you of this podcast motto. If you see something you'd like, if you hear something, well, it's time to do something about it and say something. Head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, review the podcast. Be sure to check out our In This Corner WWE edition later this week, which will include a bonus pod that you won't want to miss. But without further ado, it's time to talk boxing and, most importantly, set the stage for Saturday's light heavyweight rematch from Las Vegas as Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev do battle for a second time in what might be the best fight of the year on paper. We can debate that, but the man to debate that with is here. He'll stir things up with me. He's no stranger to the power and the money and the power. Yes, minute after minute, Rafe. Come on, hour after hour. From the gangster's paradise that is his hometown of Lower Manhattan. It's Rafe Bartholomew. Big Red, how is it, my man?
Oh, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to keep it real, stay gully out here in Manhattan. It's tough sometimes, but, you know, bring a little of that old New York flavor and that performance-enhancing audio. I just want to be the Victor Conte to your Memo Heredia, you know? I mean, that's what we're here to do, the Balco thing for the podcast world.
You always gave me more of an Alex Ariza vibe. I could picture you eventually graduating to the Nektat level. That's just a personal take on my end.
Rafe, I've always wanted a Nektat.
It says something.
I can pull it off. I can't pull it off. It's just not, you know, I know my limitations. You know, I play your position is an important thing in this world, and I try and do my best.
PYP, that's what Floyd Mayweather has taught us anything in this life, Rafe. It's that the weed on All Access at that time was fake, number one. And number two, PYP, play your position. Rafe, your position today was in NYC. Let's plug your book one more time. 2-2, McSorley's My Father and Me, representing New York. You can purchase this book. It's a father-son journey, if you will. Where can you purchase this book, Rafe? Tell the people.
I mean, it's any major bookstore, any indie bookstore, Amazon.com, anywhere you normally find books, it will be on sale there. And it's a good time to buy it. It is really a strong father-son narrative about my dad's career at McSorley's Old Ale House, one of the oldest bars in New York City, what it was like for me to grow up there and then eventually work there alongside him. And it's Father's Day is coming up. So if you need a gift, you know, I salute you if you end up buying that one.
I think boxing fans will relate to it because we love the inside culture of boxing, which produces these characters, these Boo Boy Fernandezes, these one-of-a-kind men. And I think, you know, this book, which I've sampled, it's got a lot of those guys that are missing body parts, missing large parts of their character, but they add a lot of juice to this book. And speaking of juice, Rafe, it's time to bring that audio juice to the people. Before we get into this fight, couple bits of house cleaning in the news section. We got one big one. It's that Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, it appears to be real, Rafe. I've been trying my best to sort of share my opinion, which was true that I didn't believe it was going to come off. I didn't believe it was going to come off so soon for reasons that involve more of Dana White and the UFC. But the news is changing. The latest per an ESPN source is that August 26th is the date they were looking at, Rafe. Now, that's still up for debate. If you go on the Nevada State Boxing Athletic Commission website, you'll see that there's a lock on that night. Mayweather Promotions has a card scheduled. The inside sources say that's what Floyd wants. Can this fight be turned around that quickly, Rafe?
I mean, everything we know about how this usually goes, the answer is no, right? I mean, that's too soon. I mean, I guess I've heard that Floyd is in sparring, so maybe he's getting ready. Connor, I haven't heard as much about him working out, but I mean, I'm sure he's in, you know, I mean, he stays in shape, whatever, but it's, that is extremely soon. And I guess the thought there is that maybe they like that date as a way to, steal some of the thunder from boxing's biggest event of the year, Canelo Triple G, right?
I want to get to that in one second. I'll just jump in between and say, Does it feel too soon? Yes, but here's two things. One, Mayweather-Pacquiao changed the idea that anything's too soon. Floyd made an incredible amount of last-minute decisions. They didn't build up that fight over 6 to 9 months. It was, I mean, they didn't even release tickets for, like, what, 2 to 3 weeks before? Number two, the new sort of PBC Al Haymon model is to tell fighters to get ready, have them in the gym, and then announce the fight well after everybody else on the inside knows about it. Broner Garcia, which we talked about last episode, it's going to be, what, July 29th? That was announced June 1st. That's pretty close to the date. Yeah. So maybe it's a new model. We know when we do first hear that this fight is on, it will be from Floyd. It'll probably be on some crappy social media site that won't be around next year. But to your point, I think the real...
No, it's going to be at the what's his new entertainment venue called? The Women's Collection?
Yeah, yeah.
Finders of Women?
Whatever. The key thing I thought that came out of this news on Dan Rayfield's report is what you mentioned, the connection to Canelo Triple G, that if it goes off on August 26th, this will be 3 weeks before. There's potential to steal thunder there, of course, but if you read deeply what multiple sources told ESPN, was that the reason, which we asked last week, the reason Oscar put Canelo Triple G in Las Vegas at T-Mobile instead of elsewhere, Dodger Stadium, Cowboy Stadium, whatever, is that there was language in the contract where MGM Resorts International essentially said, you put this fight September 16th in our building, and we will make sure that Floyd does not come into this building on the same night and attempt, you know, or one of our other properties and attempt to counter promote you on the same night. That seems to be more of the reason why Oscar went there. That's pretty interesting. That's MGM Resorts trying to, you know, put the lockdown on the whole business like Al Haymon style, right?
That's also interesting because, like, if you're MGM, isn't that a little dangerous to play hardball with Floyd? I mean, Floyd, assuming this fight goes off somewhere in Las Vegas, you want that money, whether you're getting it in September, August, October, November, or next year. And it seems like, you know, what's the most likely thing that'll happen? It'll just be at T-Mobile at another day and MGM will host. But what if Floyd, you know, and Uncle Al get mad and say, you know what, we're going to go down the street to my man Steve Wynn.
Nah, they won't do that. I think there's a reason
you're not popping for this fight at Thomas and Macarena?
The home of Aram, no, the house that Aram built. No, the house that Stacey Augmon built as well. But I will say this. There's a reason why Floyd has been on an MGM property, right, for like the last 15 fights, many big financial reasons. We're all waiting for Floyd to do the ultimate heel turn, double turn, and basically, you know, counter-promote the same night. This would mean he wouldn't, but it's still kind of a heel turn move to say, okay, you want to be in boxing's biggest fight of the year in September, we're going to come out 3 weeks earlier. Steal your thunder, steal the money from the people who may have been on the fence to buy one or both of them, right?
Big Connor show.
Yeah, you're right about that. Well, that'll wrap up the news because this fight's probably going to happen. I might have to eat some crow. A lot more developments probably to come. By the time you listen to this, there's probably more developments.
Let me ask you one crazy question about this. And I know if this actually happens, we'll have to talk way more than we ever want to. But out of curiosity, in this moment, when it's still kind of a fun lark to go down, who's going to train Connor? Is it going to be Freddie Roach coming in to steal that bread? I mean, you know, who can turn Connor into a master boxer?
Yeah. Well, if he can get Al Jerry to be his nutritionist, there's always a chance that there's some runoff there if he can get out of the cage in time, but actually he's going to use his MMA trainer, which is interesting. And they're going to bring in striking coaches. Yeah, man, it's a debacle. I want to see a 24/7 where it's like Freddie Roach trying to tame him or Virgil whispering in the ear. I want to see a little bit more crossover there, but it seems like we'll have all summer to break down the minutiae that is this. Before we get into the fight preview, though, there's a segment I do each week in the WWE show that I'm sure a lot of you love, or maybe you don't, but hey, that's something don't tell me in the rate and review. Act like you do. It's called Sliding in My DMs, because guess what, Rafe? DM season is open at B. Campbell CBS. I am a show for the people, by the people. I want to have a voice for the people. Well, you know what happened with that format? Somebody slid in my DMs boxing style. It opened up the mind a little bit, said, hey, why do we not do this on this landmark, on this body of water right here? Why do we not open it up for people to be swan diving into these DMs?
I've got open DMs, so all the female boxing fans out there that want to slide in on me, you're more than welcome.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that coming for you, but slide in at Rafe Book. Slide in at B. Campbell CBS. Drop us your questions if we can get some good ones. We'd love to make this a weekly segment. We're going to hit you with one this week. It's from Mitch at Mitch Twits. He wants to know, Rafe, where is the next big international boxing hub hub besides the UK surge. He says Top Rank in Macau was fun while it lasted. Of course, he says, I'm hoping the UAE funds materialize. I will say, Mitch, I have had a rapport with him back and forth on Twitter. An American-born man who, like you, Rafe, has done some time in Southeast Asia. He's on a teaching assignment in Burma. I believe he's headed to the Middle East for his next one. And you know what he did, what that means. All that time in Burma. That's a lot of Sunday mornings being sweaty with the Colonel, with Colonel Bob Sheridan. I'm sure you've enjoyed a lot of those. Rafe, I want to slide this at you. Where is the next big international boxing hub? Are they going to find the $38 million in the sand in Dubai?
I don't know. I mean, that makes some sense because there's so much money in that part of the world, but they haven't had one event there yet. And really, is there a thirst for the sport outside of maybe the long rumored Amir Khan fight there, because it would be, Pakistani Muslim fighter in a Muslim country. But other than that, I mean, do they want to keep bringing boxing there? I mean, I guess they have big hotels and fancy buildings. It looks a little bit like Vegas. I don't know. I guess I would expect Europe. I mean, there's more fighters there. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say this already exists. It is the Sport Palace in Rost something, Russia, where my man Dimitri KO'd Olenwaruju Duradola last week. I mean,
Are you speaking English right now?
The Russian promoter Rybinski, the oligarch out there, it throws huge money at fights. He already got Russian boxer number one, Roy Jones Jr., to come out and get flattened by Denis Lebedev several years ago. There's money out there. There's fighters out there. And I don't know if it will become a hub, but it's already pretty vibrant. If Povetkin can ever pass a drug test, he'll fight again there.
Is this the same area that offers all those millions at the WNBA players to come in the offseason and make more than they make their entire WNBA career?
I mean, you know, it's the same country, broadly speaking. I do not know who owns the women's basketball teams in Russia and is willing to put up the big bucks. But, you know, I practiced with the women's basketball team at Northwestern University back in my day. Have a very strong appreciation and respect for the players like Candace Parker, Diana Taurasi, and think that they should be able to go out and make a great living wherever it is.
Wow, I didn't see this podcast going there either. Off the rails
today.
Come
at me, Richard Deitch. I love women's basketball.
I will say this UAE dream and all this money buried in the sand somewhere reminds me of, let's say, 2002-ish, after Roy Jones defeated John Ruiz for that heavyweight belt, and you spent 6 months seeing AP reports that there's $15 million coming out of Nigeria and that Roy Jones will face Lennox Lewis or face Mike Tyson and all this stuff that never happened. It was never going to be there. Thanks for the question, though, Mitch. We'll hit you back next week. If you got some questions, we've got your answers. Slide in our DMs. But, Rafe, without further ado, it's Ward Kovalev 2-time. We will set the stage. It's Saturday night, HBO pay-per-view, 9 p.m. Eastern at the Mandalay Bay Event Center in Las Vegas. Rafe, we can't go forward without going back, and that first fight was last November. I'm sure everyone remembers the contentious decision. Andre Ward, 114-113 on all three scorecards. Here's my biggest point of contention with that fight, Rafe, and we're going to break down who we thought won and all that. The word robbery. How can a close fight in which everyone agrees it was a close fight that was tactically contested as a chess match be a robbery? Your thoughts?
It can. It wasn't a robbery. I don't agree with that decision. I thought that Kovalev won that fight. I'm unlike you. But still, it's not a robbery is for a whole different kind of situation. And
Pacquiao, you know, Bradley won 2012. That is outside
robbery.
Of Brian Kenny.
I wrote that was a robbery, so I have to stand by that. And of course, I believe it was. And you know, we see big robberies. I mean, okay, Chavez Whitaker draw robbery, right?
Robbery, straight up robbery.
Robbery. So I mean, there are huge, massive scale robberies, but they don't look quite like that. That was a legit close fight. I mean, I thought that Kovalev, and you know, obviously we'll get into this more, I thought Kovalev did much better work, and that Ward was, you know, the rounds he won basically by spoiling. But you know what? He controlled the second half of the fight, and it was close.
All right. First of all, how dare you? Number two, I was having a little bit fun with robbery or not robbery. One more for you. Brandon Rios, Richard Abril, robbery or not robbery?
Oof. Oof. I mean, no, that probably was a robbery.
You better believe it was.
Rios really, really stunk up the ring in that fight. But man, it's so hard to get behind Richard Abreu and be like, man, I'm taking up the cause for this, you know, clinching Cuban master.
He's Cuban B. Ah, yes, Cuban B. Yes, yes. Rafe, here's my big question for you. I'm going to ask you how you scored the fight. You revealed you scored it for Kovalev. I want your score on the first one, and I want your defense for why Kovalev deserved to win that fight.
Okay. I didn't score that fight. I was.
Let me pull your hashtag
boxing
heads card.
I was in Lapu-Lapu City, you know, attending basketball games, you know, getting my Colonel Bob on. I did watch the fight, actually not live, but after the night after it was on, and I did not see any way to come out of that feeling like Andre Ward won. Now, maybe if I had tried to score it and really forced myself, you know, it could be one of these Pacquiao Marquez 3 situations where you have these close rounds where the guy who feels like he deserved to win the fight or did better overall in the fight that may not have the case round by round. Like that does happen, and that's one of the interesting things about the sport that drives some people crazy. I think if we, you know, people who love boxing don't mind it that much. It could be that, but to me, even that second half of the fight, Brian, I just round 10, but in general, that just didn't feel like a sweep or a 5-1 situation in favor of Andre Ward. That felt more like 4-2, 3-3. It felt split to me. The stuff Ward was doing didn't feel like it was like worthy of points. It was like, I will hold you with one hand and do this with the, I'm sorry, I'm looking at myself on a camera, but we're not actually doing
it. So, I saw you just fine. Don't worry about it. I saw everything.
Holding and slapping, inside work that definitely prevented Kovalev from you know, doing his best work in the fight. But also, I just didn't think it was worthy of rounds. You know,
all right, those
were not scoring to me.
I'm going to expose two things right now. One, I'm coming at you. Okay. I'm going to expose. You still have your hashtag boxing heads card, right? You were in the Philippines. We can give you a break. You didn't have a pen and paper handy. For all I know, there is no pen and paper handy in the Philippines.
Oh, you rape. God, yeah, I'm sick of this racism.
Celebrating every day. No more. So Rafe, here's what I'm trying to say. I think you may have fallen into the trap of the hashtag casuals who watch a fight. They watch Andre Ward get dropped early and in pain. And then they watch some pretty boring rounds the rest of the way and go, who won that fight? Oh, well, it's clearly Kovalev. He had the biggest impact. He hurt him. He dropped him early. And then those same people, and this wasn't you because you weren't Colonel Blob, hell, were watching Harold Letterman go 160, you know. Okay, Jim. 116, 111 for Sergey Kovalev. Jim, I got to tell you something. That's exactly what they're watching, and essentially they're going, okay, he won the fight. But boxing is scored, as you know, on a round-by-round on a 12-round format. The other issue I have with this is that the Max Kellerman, Harold Letterman school love both guys, but their school of judging comes from who hurt the other guy more. And I don't believe that's how you judge a fight. There's 5 categories, right? There's 5 areas of concern, you know, from offense, defense, ring generalship, all that, and how you would judge a round to give you the score for the fight. It's not who hurt the guy more, because I'm sorry, your fighter may land 2 big punches, but for the other 2 minutes and 58 seconds of the round, fighter B might be dancing around him, landing more punches, controlling time, space, distance, all of that. And I think that's what Andre Ward did in the second half of that fight. I had it 114, 113, exactly like the 3 judges. Now, that's saying I scored it 7-5, essentially, for Ward. And the defense for the Kovalev fans is, how do you give Ward 7 rounds? I flipped that right back on you. What did Kovalev do in the second half of that fight that where you would say he deserves to win it? And I know that the problem people have is, okay, if you're going to score for Ward, then you almost have to give him 6 straight rounds in the second half. Well, let's go back and watch that second half. Kovalev's a puncher who walks people down with his big jab and sets up the right hand. Ward took away both that big jab and the right hand by crowding him. He wore him down by going to the body. He showed ring generalship by making Kovalev fight at a pace and distance he didn't want to. That's enough to win a boring round in my eyes when the other guy, Kovalev, did nothing. So, Rafe, why are people scoring these rounds in the second half for Kovalev when nothing happened and he wasn't the one setting the tone?
I think the simple answer, and I don't think that this is all the way wrong either, is that in those rounds that are close and there's not a lot happening, and maybe I don't think not even maybe, obviously, Andre Ward is going to win the ring generalship in a lot of rounds, even if he loses rounds. I mean, he's a master of that. But in those rounds, you would see if Kovalev landed enough decent shots. All right. Now that is it. That obviously that's subjective. All boxing judging is subjective. But say he landed, you know, like two is probably not enough for me to want to give him a round, like your example. But if it's five, if it's eight, and they look like cleaner, more effective punches than what Ward was doing, and my interpretation of what Ward was doing in a round was basically like holding, getting away with whatever the ref would let him get away with, sort of deadening. Spoiling Kovalev, making it hard for Kovalev to do what he wants to do. Well, you have to do something. I think it's not enough just to spoil. I think you have to do something to take that round as well. You need to land the punches that actually have an impact. And some people think that the body work was enough for that. To me, in all those rounds, I don't think it was. So in some of those rounds, like that one fabulous moment, I forget what round it was. That one fabulous moment where they start trying to trade the bolo punches and show each other up, and then Ward tries another one, and Kovalev just tags him with the jab. I don't care what happened that round. That's a Kovalev round for me. No, I that's not actually. I won't die on that line. But in general, I didn't feel like Andre Ward was doing enough to actually win those rounds. It was not an active enough approach to the fight to me.
All right. So
this is just look, I'm not a boxing judge. I guess if I were being paid to take it seriously and really come up with an honest scorecard, I would approach fights a little bit differently. But to me, Ward clinched excessively, I thought, and he got and look, you get away with whatever the ref lets you get away with, and that's fine.
That's
career,
sport. Right? That's
but,
Klitschko
but
versus
I don't,
Povetkin.
But I'm watching the fight, and I'm saying, look, I don't want to see a guy win that way. All right, I said this at the time. To me, it's the dirtiest win I've seen, dirtiest legit win since Hatton over Kasuzu.
Wow! 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 I was going to say, which I mentioned there, Klitschko, Povetkin, and Klitschko Jennings over the second half of that fight.
Yeah,
all
but
the
those
same
weren't even
year.
That competitive. I mean,
all right. Look, so I scored a 114-113 for Ward, and admitted that a lot of these rounds are close. So obviously, I'm not upset with anybody who has Kovalev 14-13, 15-12, even 16-11. Right? I get it. They're close rounds. I just don't like the robbery. And here's the number two thing. And there's something I like to bring up a lot. There's the battle, and there's the war. Right, the battle was the fight. Ward won it. You can disagree or agree, that's fine, but there's an overall war to each fight, and I don't see how anybody can say Kovalev won the war in this fight when you consider that he failed to make an adjustment and he had his biggest weapons take away from him, which I mentioned, and it was Ward. Now, he's not a beloved guy, and that's another thing we can talk about in a second, but Ward essentially was the bigger story, getting up off the canvas, getting back into the bully's face, making it a fight over the second half. So if I'm going to ask us, what did we learn from the first fight? I think we learned that Ward won the war, and there's significantly more questions that need to be answered from my point of view from Kovalev in the rematch than from Ward. What did you learn from the first fight?
Yeah, I think that, and this is sort of getting, you know, immediately a lot of people thought, and I think this is a reasonable outlook, coming out of that first fight, that whatever happened in the second half, you know, those last final six rounds, which, you know, Ward controlled, either dominated or won the majority of, however you want to slice it, that it looked like he had figured out how to take away some of what Kovalev does best. Now, was that Kovalev running out of gas? Who knows? I mean, you know, we'll never know this stuff. Like, you know, does a fighter run out of gas? Does his opponent take it away from him with body work or by leaning on him or whatever it is?
Just to clarify, he said he ran out of gas from round five because he overtrained the last two fights. And I think it is supported when you watch that Isaac Chalemba fight, which he won by 12-round decision. He didn't look great, right? He said he overtrained leading in.
But at the same, with all this stuff, it's hard to, you can't really, I don't really, you're not even worth getting into guys' excuses unless they are physical, like, you know, broken hand type excuses, because There's just no way to know. You know, he appeared to be fighting pretty hard back in November. So I don't really, you know, you just can't look. If you ran out of gas, I don't care what the reason is. You ran out of gas.
Well, let's get into the promotion now that we did the before. Now we'll do the current. The storylines were interesting. You know, it wasn't a world-changing 24/7 HBO episode by any means. The biggest storyline, of course, is something we touched on in the show, John David Jackson Gate, where both sides essentially say that John David Jackson, the trainer of Kovalev, who we saw, like we mentioned in that preview show, they added a Russian-speaking member of Kovalev's corner. Kovalev wasn't listening, it seemed, to JDJ over the stretch of that first fight in the second half of it. Did Jackson call Ward and offer to switch camps and give away secrets? Or did Ward plant that story that he did? And really, it was Ward's team that reached out to Jackson to try to steal secrets or just get in their head. It may not matter in the end, Rafe, because Kovalev and Jackson seem to be, they say this has made them closer. But who do you actually believe was the root of this?
I have not, you know, really tried to get to the, I haven't Sherlocked this out all the way. At the top of my head, the camp that is more is sneakier in fighting style and in you know promotions or you know like in lead up style is Ward's camp. You know they, you know, are good at tweaking their opponents, playing the game of both sort of dismissing guys, you know, like doing the sort of imperious "you're not even on my level" thing. They're the same way that Andre Ward is a very, sort of fights in a sort of cerebral style where he figures out his opponent and neutralizes them. It's easy to sort of think that, all right, well, if that's the kind of that's the way they work, then maybe this is Ward and Virgil Hunter trying to sow some seeds bad blood inside Kovalev's corner, which wouldn't necessarily be that hard because there were real things going on, right? The Russian guy who shows up and starts talking to Kovalev throughout the fight.
Did he have a black hat? Trainer. He didn't have a black hat, right?
It wasn't the man with the black hat.
Wasn't the guy from Cod Peterson. Pill.
I mean, you know, it had all, there are reasons. And also just, you know, you just, I mean, if you look back to some of those, you know, Sergey Kovalev, has not, you know, I mean, his racist tweet about Adonis Stevenson a few years ago, which John David Jackson has sort of had to stand up for Kovalev, which he has done and been sort of done in a very sort of dignified, respectful manner. But at the same time, Ward and Hunter might be on the other side being like, well, maybe we want to poke at that soft spot a little bit and see how badly this trainer really wants to stand up for this fighter who has done some objectionable things in the past. So if you make me guess, I'm going to guess that it was kind of started on the Ward side where they sensed some weakness or some dissension and wanted to sort of just stir that pot and see what happened.
Very interesting on who I don't know. Ward's reaction was kind of convincing where he was like, why would I call them? What would I have to gain when I have the best trainer in the world and Virgil Hunter, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, Ward is sneaky and calculated. He realizes there was a rift there. He said he had not a spy in their camp, but he claimed somebody was picking up the phone from the Kovalev camp during the build of the first fight and letting him know the secrets. And in the story I ran on CBS Sports last week from my interview with Ward, and we ran those comments on this podcast last week, it kind of felt like he was teasing that it was John David Jackson who picked up the phone during the first training camp and called him. And he says that further I've read where Ward's attorney slash manager, Josh Dubin, does work with John David Jackson, does work with his fighters. So there is, you know, an open communication there. All very interesting. As long as Kovalev and John David are back together, then it's probably not going to mean anything in the fight.
You know, I mean, this is the thing with Kovalev. I mean, and he just doesn't have the same kind of close bond with John David Jackson that certainly that Andre Ward and Virgil Hunter have, or even, you know, any of the other, when you think of the really close fighter trainer bond, you know, Manny and Freddie Roach or whoever, you know, that doesn't exist between them. Kovalev, and this is part of his whole story, is almost this totally self-made guy, right? I mean, he was not a heralded amateur in the Russian system. He couldn't break out there. He came to the States and started fighting on undercards, you know, and had no promoter when he got hooked up with Egis Klimas, his manager, and, you know, was just going out there and fighting until they managed to talk Main Events into signing him, and he started to become something. And so he and you know, he spent some time basically as Gennady Golovkin's sparring partner, and felt like Abel Sanchez wasn't giving him the amount of attention he deserved when he trained up there at the Summit.
And shout out to our old podcast, The Ropes on Grantland, where we got Abel Sanchez to tell us that story?
Oh yeah, yeah. He had some questions about Sergey Kovalev's character, and he sent him down the mountain. If you ask Abel, now I think I've heard different versions of that story from the Kovalev camp. But the thing is, he basically, I think, you know, has this story of being a self-made champion and found a trainer who he worked well with in John David Jackson. But between the language barriers and Kovalev's English, we've interviewed him at different points in our careers. It has improved. You can have a conversation with him. But I don't know to how close they're really getting when it's not. I like whenever I hear Kovalev's having an actual conversation that he doesn't have to, like, isn't being forced to by his promoter. It's in Russian. It's not in English. I don't know how close you can really expect them to be. And with Kovalev, John David Jackson likes to talk about his game plans for the fights. I mean, what's the game plan? Sergey Kovalev is going to come out, use his jab, and try and land punches until he knocks someone out, stops them. Or he just dominates like he did against Bihop. I think Kovalev comes up with his own game plan and fights his own style in the ring. And if he gets in shape and he's, you know, well-trained, then that's what you're looking for from his trainer.
Rafe, I have a piece on CBSSports.com this week saying essentially that Kovalev has more pressure heading into the rematch for all the reasons I laid out just a few minutes ago about having to prove that he has this aura invincibility as arguably the most balanced and dangerous fighter pound for pound in the world. That aura of invincibility gets flipped upside down. But because of the bad scorecard in the first fight, there's a bit of a built-in mulligan there. He has one chance to repair that. He's the one who triggered the contractual obligated rematch in the contract. So I'm pretty secure in saying Kovalev's the guy who's got to answer a lot of questions. He can't let this go to the scorecards if he doesn't, you know, have to. He's got to be more aggressive, all that. Who has more pressure entering the rematch in your eyes?
I'm going to think about my answer to that question, but like just the idea that Kovalev has all this pressure, to knock out Ward. I mean, we know that is unlikely to happen. Even if Kovalev wins clearly, that is still unlikely to happen because Andre Ward has never been knocked out. He's been down twice. Kovalev did do that to him once, but he is a great, he's a great boxer, and he is a very good defensive boxer. He knows how not to get hurt, how not to get hit cleanly. Even if Kovalev goes out and fights great, fights his best fight, he could win and still might not, you know, get the knockout. I don't think I mean, that's sort of like saying that, oh, you know, Pacquiao has to knock out Mayweather for that fight to have gone well for him. Well, no, I mean, if he had fought well or decent, that fight might have been better for him. You know, the reason we love this matchup is because it's a close matchup, and there's one guy who is one of the best defensive fighters in the sport, in Andre Ward. So the idea that
I didn't mean he had to knock him out. I'm just saying that adds to the pressure, the idea of let me not let this get to this.
And he's putting the pressure on himself, right? I mean, Kovalev is talking a little bit. I think he's pushing that narrative a little bit too far on his own, saying, I want to end his career. Like, he will never box again. Like, you know, and, you know, look, if that's the mental kind of headspace he needs to get in to have the aggression to press for 12 rounds and not sort of gas out or not, you know, not have that second half drop off or, you know, and really give himself a chance to win, knockout or no knockout, then that's fine. But the idea that you're going into a fight saying, I'm not going to be satisfied unless I knock out Andre Ward, well, then I would say chances are like 95% you're going to be unsatisfied by the end of the night, win or lose.
We'll see when we get to the predictions. One final thing, and one final plug for myself is another piece I have is the improbability, if you look at the start of Andre Ward's career, that by this point he's regularly cast as a villain. You know, if there's good versus evil in how they pitched and promote these fights in boxing, if you can borrow from the pro wrestling side of that, you know, Ward has been a heel in recent years, you know, and there's reasons for it. There's a level of arrogance there in a closed nature that he has with the media, where I'd say the combination of media and hardcore fans, especially on social media, they don't look at this guy as a conquering American hero, a clean-cut family man, former gold medalist, last American male to win a gold medalist. He's generally looked at as a villain, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Now, he's rolled with the punches. He's accepted that. He's learned how to use that as fuel, which is what I got into with him on my piece this week. Is it justified in your eyes, Rafe? You know, I'm a little bit more of a Ward fan. I'm a respecter of what he does in the ring. I thought he won the first fight. Maybe there's people that are going to read that and go, oh, you're a Ward guy. Well, you know, I respect what he does as a fighter. From your point of view, is he a villain in your eyes? Is that the vibe you get when you sort of look out on the landscape?
It always depends on the fight, right? I mean, in this one, it really is hard to pick a hero in this. I mean, Kovalev, we've already talked about, you know, is not – have the kindest background either in terms of some of his, you know, his, you know, his, the problems he's had with race and being of being a racist. So that is probably a greater sin in my eyes than
stop you there. They don't hold it against
him. Not getting along
him.
With the media.
No one holds that against him as, well, you know, not to be Ward's advocate here, but I'm going to be honest and say nobody holds that against Kovalev at the level they hold against Ward some of the more minor things like, you know, holding his prime hostage to take Dan Goosen to court multiple times and coming back against soft opponents. Yes, those are things that build the ire against people, but it feels like people are more willing to be angry at that or angry at Ward not opening up in an interview than Kovalev being essentially accidentally outright racist, right?
Yeah, well, and that's one of the crazy things about boxing is I think actually when the thing that fans forgive least is inactivity, is not being in the ring. I mean that whole period when Andre Ward was in the promotional dispute with, you know, his former producer, you know, Dan Goosen and rest in peace. All of that. That period is when it really seemed like the narrative turned against Ward, because, you know, if you remember going back to when he won the Super Six and then came out of that and beat Chad Dawson. I mean, that was, you know, that was when people started to get behind him and you started to think like, wow, this guy's, oh, the last American gold medalist, great fighter, really starting to come on, you know, really starting to come on in terms of notoriety and the respect he gets in the sport. Probably the best fighter in the world, not named Floyd Mayweather. Some people, our good friend Eric Raskin over the HBO podcast, already was calling Ward his top pound-for-pound fighter while Floyd was still active. And then that all went downhill once Ward stopped fighting. And then we'd get him, you know, every 18 months against Edwin Rodriguez, Alexander Brand, all these guys that these fights no one wanted to see. And it really, it kind of snowballed from there. And he hasn't done himself, you know, he hasn't really gone on a goodwill tour to win people back into his corner. He's just kind of done what he does, which is say, nah, I didn't do anything wrong. And this is how I choose to run my career. So deal with it. And, you know, I respect that he is, and I respect him as a fighter. But it's, I don't know. There is no good guy. There's no bad. This is just a boxing matchup, which is kind of cool, but probably not great for the pay-per-view receipts that HBO can get on Saturday night. But that's what I think is neat about it. Just, you know, two guys who aren't necessarily likable to this or that or anybody, you know, everybody or some people, but forget it, man. They're both great fighters and they already fought one great fight. Maybe not exciting, but great, like, you know, momentum swings, some chess match stuff, a knockdown, different kinds of action, and they're going to do it again. And I think they're both going to look a little bit different, and we get to watch how that plays out. That's all that matters.
Yeah, and in the first fight, it was dramatic. It was sort of edge of the seat the whole way, you know, into the scorecards, into the finish and all of that. Now let's move forward to that second fight, to the rematch. We know what's at stake. It's the trio of light heavyweight world titles that Ward captured by defeating Kovalev. It's probably the number one pound for pound, you know, a spot on the list in the top 10. If somebody wins convincingly, that's certainly at stake. Ward's unbeaten record. I mentioned sort of Kovalev regaining that aura of invincibility, all at stake here. Before we get into sort of the predictions, how each guy wins, let's see what role the referee and judges will play. It's been announced that veteran referee Tony Weeks will be working this fight, along with a strong trio of judges, Glenn Feldman, Dave Moretti, Steve Weisfeld of HBO fame from back in the day. Just for reference point, both Moretti and Feldman did Frampton Santa Cruz 2 in January. Both had it 115-113 for Leo, who ended up winning that fight. Feldman also lives down the road from me, good guy, so I'll give him a shout-out on here. The real story, I think, here is Tony Weeks, though, Rafe. And we've seen this guy, you know, seen him in Corrales Castillo 1. You know, he's going to go down as a legend. Got probably the best hair part in the game right now, you know, over time if you look at him. But he's a liberal referee. You have to look no further than the two Maidana-Mayweather fights. The first one, Tony Weeks reffed. Maidana got away with roughing up Floyd inside, with doing the dirty helicopter punches, with just being a maniac. In the rematch, you get Kenny Bayless, much more conservative, broke them at the point of contact. I think when you look at how Weeks will affect Ward Kovalev too, you have to say, great news for Andre Ward. And we may be hearing some more excuses from Sergey after the fight, because Weeks lets you go at it. One thing Kovalev does not do, Rafe, he does not fight well on the inside. He's long, he's lean, he hits you from the outside. Ward can fight sneaky on the inside. He's not afraid to clinch you up Vladimir Klitschko style after one punch and hold you. Yeah, this is a Ward. This is a Ward victory, right? In terms of, you know, getting a referee that fits your style.
Absolutely, and you know, I think, and I don't mean that to say in any bad way about Tony Weeks, who I think has been one of the more consistent, really strong referees in Las Vegas and in the sport in recent years. You know, doesn't get into the catchphrases and the sort of, you know, believing in his own myth that we see as some of the, you know, sometimes refs, they realize, oh, I'm this guy, I'm known for this, you know.
Or the volleyball chairs, right? The volleyball chairs on top. He didn't get into that either.
But he's I think he's a good referee. But yeah, it's chances are he's going to let Ward work on the inside, which is, you know what? I mean, I as someone who thought that Ward held too much in that first fight, this may sound crazy, but if Kovalev is going to beat him, I think I would like to see Kovalev defeat Ward fighting Ward's fight, you know, maybe not, you know, don't, I'm not saying let Ward be dirty, but Ward usually isn't that dirty. He's just tricky. He's in, he'll use his smarts and the rules to do what he can do and to slow down his opponent. And, you know, if Kovalev, you know, I think Kovalev can beat that version of Ward with the ref that way. Let's see him go out there and do it. And if he doesn't, then, you know, he has to live with it. You know, I mean, but one referee note, Brian. You know the guy who we need. I know it's impossible because he's not crossing state lines. But the one and only Mr. Regulator, Jack Reese.
Could Jack get off my lawn?
Talk about a guy who knows how to stop Andre Ward's shenanigans in the ring.
You will know
2 points off the bat.
You may remember him from his work in Ward Edwin Rodriguez, where Edwin's only chance was to brawl and be dirty, and Uncle Jack put the smackdown on that right off the start. He basically home aloned him and said, "Edwin, you're such a disease. I'll take all your points away right now if you do that again." Unbelievable work there from Jack Reese. Rafe, before we slide into these predictions, I'm going to hit you with how does Kovalev win? Well, Rafe, I think Kovalev wins by doing what he didn't do, which is be more aggressive for 12 rounds, right? I mean, he showed against Bernard Hopkins that he can be patient, that he can mix things up in box and punch. But I don't think he can play chess with Ward. So how does Kovalev win? He's got to leave no doubt. He's got to be much more aggressive in the first 4 to 5 rounds. He was aggressive in the first fight, in the first, let's say, 1, 2, maybe 3. Then he sort of slowed down. He got tired. There were adjustments. I think he's got to be a little bit more reckless and bold throughout to have a chance to win. And that jab, no matter what Ward is doing to try to take it away, that jab needs to be there. Rafe, how does Andre Ward win the rematch?
Well, this is the interesting thing, because Andre Ward, we've seen in the past, and we know that, you know, is a little more of a chameleon as a fighter, right? He can do it. He can win in a lot of different ways. He can figure out new ways maybe to shut down Kovalev. So it's hard to guess exactly what Ward is going to do, when I think you're right on point about what Kovalev needs to do, which is just go in there, do more of the same and harder, and don't stop doing it. But Ward, I mean, the one thing I think that, and you mentioned this, he wants to get inside, right? I mean, take away that distance, take away Kovalev's ability to land those long, damaging punches, whether it's the jab, which sets it up, or those right hands that come over the top of it. It may be, you know, that he'll punch and then kind of lean and then fall in, trying to smother it, like smother anything coming back at him. I, you know, that's the sort of beauty of watching an Andre Ward fight is you don't know exactly how he's going to get from point A to point B in the fight, but he, and watching him figure out that, that equation is part of basically the joy of watching him operate.
Absolutely.
The one obvious possibility is that he just does what he did the second half of the first fight, right? I mean, he'll clinch, he'll get inside, he'll work the body, and he'll make it so Kovalev can't really get going. Now it's up to Kovalev to stop him from doing that. And if Kovalev does start, you know, start doing some good work, what's Ward's next adaptation after that?
Good point. Good point all along. This is the perfect segue to our predictions. And you know our new segment that we love. It's called What Does It Look Like? When you match up a fantasy fight, a fight we want to see, an all-timer against the guy from 50 years ago, how would it? What would it look like? Number one, Ward Kovalev. Two, what does it look like? Rafe, for me, here's what it looks like. And you mentioned it looks a lot like the first fight, second half. After Ward gets through the storm, because I think Kovalev will be aggressive. I think Ward will get hit early. I think Ward will sort of lose a couple rounds early in order to make that adjustment, because Ward is Mayweather-like. And when you're fighting against Mayweather, you have a window to surprise him. And then he makes that adjustment. He puts it on lockdown, and it's up to you to do things that you don't normally do to try to mix things up and get around him. I think the fact that Ward has been through 12 rounds, has been knocked down, has taken some good right hands, he's confident. He knows what it's going to take. He's not going to buckle at the first shot. I think after some hairiness early on, Ward's going to win by unanimous decision. It's going to be a close fight, but there's going to be enough of a cushion there where 80% of the people watching are going to go, yep, that was Ward. He did what he had to do. He was defensive. He held at times. He did whatever he pretty much had to do. He was a smarter fighter. He won this, no doubt. He's your pound-for-pound king. Rafe, what does this fight look like?
I think that that's how Ward would like it to look. I think that, look, if Sergey Kovalev lets Andre Ward fight 12 rounds like he fought the last 6 rounds of their first fight, then Andre Ward wins this fight. I mean, that's not really rocket science or a bold, you know, bold analysis there. But if Kovalev does not do something to prevent Ward from just, you know, basically saying, I figured you out already, and this is how it's going to be, then Kovalev loses this fight. I do think that whether, you know, Kovalev had overtrained last time or just ran out of gas or Ward's body work slowed him down, whatever slowed Kovalev down in the second half of that last fight, he knows that the way to stay in control of this fight, or to seize control and stay in control, is to keep working, is to not get lulled into that, you know, that chess match with Andre Ward where he is going to basically outthink him. And I know this is easier said than done, because this is, goes back to like everybody who ever fought Floyd Mayweather saying, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to be active, and I'm never going to hit him everywhere, and I'm never going to stop throwing all that stuff. And then you get in there and they can't figure out, you know, which way is up and down. Now Kovalev is basically, I mean, I thought they proved that even though they fight different styles, they're basically, these two fighters are close to equals in the ring at this weight. So I don't think that he's going to look like a fool in this fight. I think that he's going to be active. I think that if number one on his game plan is just to keep jabbing, you said it already, use his jab as much as possible as a way to keep distance, as a way to just, you know, win, try to fool, not fool, but try to make sure that the judges know who is outworking the other in this fight. And also as a chance to set up the punches that will actually have a chance of damaging, hurting, and perhaps knocking out Andre Ward. You know, keep that jab going, and don't be afraid to follow it up with his power punches with that right hand, even if it's not a perfect opportunity. You know, the more that he is working against Ward and making Ward, you know, concentrate on not being hurt by him, the less Ward is going to be able to do to win those rounds back in his favor. And I think that he's going to do it semi-convincingly. I think it'll last. There'll be a lot of close rounds. I think that Ward may come on strong again towards the end. I think that we're just going to get a makeup decision this time. I think that it will be a close fight. I wouldn't even predict a knockdown. I mean, I think that knocking down, you just don't go in expecting to knock down Andre Ward or even hurt him. It may come, it could come, but you don't expect that. But Kovalev is going to work enough to make it a close fight. He knows that's what he needs to do. And we're going to get that weird sort of like, well, maybe Ward won this one, even, you know, maybe Ward legitimately won this one in more people's eyes, but the judges give it to Kovalev and set up the rubber match.
Well, there is no rematch clause for a third fight, but if that scenario played out, we know we'd see one. It'd be interesting to get three sort of tactical test matches out of these guys under your scenario. Would be very interesting. We're going to have a lot more of what does this look like each week, so send them into us. Hit me up. Hit slide in our DMs like we talked to me about. Hit me up at bcampbellcbs at Rafe Boogs. Your predictions are, as we said, a Ward by unanimous decision for me. Rafe, you liked Kovalev.
Kovalev by some sort of split or majority decision.
By
me.
Some wacky decision from there.
Yeah.
The fight will be a good one. We'll be back, of course, next week to talk about it. Be sure to get out there and rate, review, subscribe. Be sure to hear our WWE products later in this week with the guys, with Nick Costos, with Adam Silverstein. We got some good guests later in the week with WWE. And Rafe, we're just building the foundation here for the In This Corner Boxeo version. A lot of big names, a lot of big things to come on the horizon. Thanks so much for being part. You got any message for the listeners as we take this out?
I believe it's just we out.